the Obama administration essentially acquiesced to a high-priced lobbying campaign to delist the Iranian dissident movement, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, the Khalq or the MEK. They have been removed from the United States FTO, the Foreign Terrorism Organization list. Flint Leverett served as Middle East expert on George Bush's National Security Council staff, George W. Bush, until the Iraq War, worked at the State Department before that and at the CIA. Flint Leverett wrote in reaction to Friday's removal from the terrorist watch list of the MEK that the U.S. Department of State took the moral and strategic bankruptcy of America's Iran policy to a new low by notifying Congress that the Obama administration intends to remove the Mujahideen-e-Khalq from the U.S. State Department's list of foreign terrorist organizations. I'm very glad we have to join us, the two people to discuss this. First, Robert Baer is an American author and a former CIA case officer, primarily assigned to the Middle East. He's currently Time Magazine's Time.com intelligence columnist. One of Robert Baer's recent books is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. He's also written The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. Robert Baer, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm also very glad to introduce our guest, Jeremiah Gulka, who interviewed a number of former MEK members in Iraq. He worked for the RAND Corporation and researched and wrote about the Mujahideen-e-Khalq for RAND's client, the Detainee Operations Command, which was a task force on Iraq founded after the Abu Ghraib scandal. Jeremiah Gulka also worked in the Bush administration's Justice Department from 2002 to 06 as a trial attorney. Jeremiah Gulka, welcome back and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me again, John.
I want to start out by asking you, Robert Baer, about your reactions to this. You've spent time understanding and reading about and writing about the Middle East, and I wonder how you see this removal from the foreign terrorist organization list of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq.
Well, I have a couple comments. Right now, my sentiment is, and I just got back from the Middle East, that we're circling the drain. And it's going to get a lot worse. And this is mainly a Sunni problem. It's an Arab-Sunni problem. But it seems to me adding another element into this, which is, you know, we're on our way to backing the Mujahideen al-Khalq. I just feel that's coming as some sort of covert action. Do we need another element of chaos in the Middle East? You know, is it going to help? Number two is I was in Tehran in 78, and I remember we were warned, and we specifically went out of our way being hunted by the MEK. They tried to kill a CIA officer who was coming out of the embassy. They ambushed his car. Fortunately, he had just dismounted out of the car right around the corner. They didn't know that, and they killed his driver. So these people have blood on their hands. Now, you know, what sort of redemption is there in this world? I don't know. That's not my answer. The other thing is I find it odd that the State Department and the Department of Justice let people take money from the MEK to lead this campaign. You know, if you did that with anything associated with Al-Qaeda, you would end up in jail. But, you know, times change, and we're going to see where this goes.
You made an interesting point there. You're talking about people in the United States receiving money, payments, from the Mujahideen-e-Khalq in order to speak on behalf of the MEK in the United States, essentially at events and for an organization advocating to be removed from the terrorist watch list, as it's called, the FTO. Who are some of those people? They're very prominent.
Oh, it's big names. I didn't keep track of the list. I mean, major foreign policy players that got a considerable amount of money for speeches in Europe and the United States and traveled around. It was an enormous lobbying campaign and obviously very successful. I just don't remember the names, but I was just struck by how many prominent, responsible people were effectively taking MEK money.
Some former officials of the U.S. government, also in journalism, fairly recently, Bob Woodward did this.
I could jump in with a few names there if you want.
Please, Jeremiah.
Yeah.
You had Mayor Giuliani of New York, John Bolton, former ambassador to the U.N., Newt Gingrich was a recent one. Tom Ridge, the first Homeland Security Secretary, Francis Fredris Townsend, the Homeland Security Advisor, Louis Free, former FBI Director, General Hugh Shelton, and the list kind of goes on and on.
Attorney General Michael Mukasey, House Speaker Dennis Hastert, Republican from Illinois, and others. I wonder, Robert Baer, in your experience with national security institutions, have you ever heard of anything like this? Is it unprecedented, or does this kind of advocacy occur more frequently than we might hear?
Well, let's be fair about it. The Palestinians were involved in terrorism, and they got a certain redemption in Oslo and then coming to the White House, including Arafat. I mean, I'm not anti-Palestinian or pro-Fatah in any sense, but he did. He got redemption. He made a certain concessions, but the MEK is very much a shadowy organization. It's nearly a cult, and I don't know that they've at least said they're going to give up violence. I mean, it's clear to me that they were involved in the assassinations in Tehran of the nuclear scientists. So it's a shadowy group, and, you know, it's just a very odd decision to delist them.
They've been active in Iran. There, of course, are these assassinations that have occurred in Iran of scientists, of nuclear scientists. Some have speculated that Israel's Mossad intelligence agency was involved. What have you heard about the MEK's involvement?
Well, I think they were. I mean, Mossad cannot operate in Iran. You know, normal Israelis, you know, like the team that hit the guy in Dubai, they just can't go there. They're using proxies. And I think the best information is the proxies are the MEK or groups associated with them that have carried out these assassinations. Now, I realize that people say this is all for a greater good, but we are getting into a moral quagmire here. First of all, these prominent people, I didn't realize all those people are on that list taking money from the MEK before it was delisted, and now turning to them and you know, heading toward this covert action program.
Is essentially taking money from an organization on the Foreign Terrorist Organization watch list, is that in itself illegal? Have people been prosecuted for that?
Well, let me put it this way. I was very close to people at the State Department that were trying to do something with Iran. This was a year and a half ago, and they were just, this is making it very difficult for us to go into sanctions and negotiations with the Iranians, seriously go into it, and expect to be taken seriously. Now, I'm not saying the Iranians would have ever given us anything, but if you can't take a group that's clearly associated with terrorism inside Iran and then go and negotiate with them to stop their nuclear program, it was just a contradiction that bothered the State Department at the time. I don't know how they feel now.
Jeremiah Gulka, your thoughts?
So, you know, it is a weird situation. And there's, you know, on one side, the MEK has actually made clear statements of a commitment to abandoning violence, which they did in the mid statement in 2002. To all the members who were in Iraq when the U.S. invaded, and there was a ceasefire with American forces, signed a document individually saying that they would not do violence anymore, for whatever that's worth, just responding to say that they have said this. And it's, you know, this is confusing. I'm trying to work out whether or sort of how disappointed I am by the decision. I'm not terribly surprised by it, but I'm far from delighted about it. There is a humanitarian benefit for the individual members of the MEK cult who have been stuck in Iraq for, you know, decades now, and there's now a chance to actually possibly get them resettled somewhere, because so long as they were on the group, on the terrorist organization list, no country would even consider taking them. Whether that will change a whole lot now remains to be seen, but at least that is out of the way. But in terms of on other levels, was this a good decision? I'm not sure. The power of the lobbying was probably, I wonder whether it was definitive. It probably helped, certainly. in leading to this decision. Getting the MEK to leave Camp Ashraf and go to a camp outside of Baghdad, a former Camp Liberty, to be processed for resettlement to another to a third country, meaning not Iraq, not Iran, was something that, for that to happen, the international officials wanted them to be taken down to Baghdad and not be in the MEK's own facility. And I think that the State Department statements that they needed to hold out the carrot of delisting was probably necessary to get the MEK to do this, because they're a tremendously difficult group to work with. The State Department has been, it's been like an albatross on the State Department's neck since the invasion. And it would not surprise me at all if the relevant State Department officials were truly moving forward with a desire to get it off of their plate, even to the extent of ignoring possible other ramifications. One of the ramifications that have been talked about is that this will further undermine American credibility in Iran, among Iranian people, as saying that we, America, are truly dedicated to democracy and some type of democratic change in Iran. I'm not sure exactly how seriously I take that, because I have a hard time imagining that we're viewed as an honest broker almost anywhere in the Middle East, much less Iran, due to the way that sanctions affect the people most. It's a strange situation. One thing on the alleged assassinations of the Iranian nuclear weapons scientists, the lawyer in me has been kind of revisiting the statute, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, which is what created the Foreign Terrorist Organization list. And one of the things that the MEK has been playing on a lot is arguing that, at least as on how the statute's written, it doesn't necessarily fit terribly well, in part because the tax on Americans happened so long ago. And of course, the MEK denies that they did it. They say it was due to a splinter group. And I don't take those denials terribly seriously. But I think there is an interesting question about the recentness of their acts of violence. And if the only truly recent acts were the Iranian the assassinations of the scientists, and if even if those were actually truly done by the MEK, under the statute, that wouldn't actually qualify as a reason to be on the statute, because the way the statute's written, the acts of violence and of terrorism have to be to go either be directed at American citizens or be against the United States national security interests. And insofar as the public pronouncements coming from the White House and elsewhere have been pretty consistent that we do not want Iran to get nuclear weapons, I can imagine at least the State Department lawyers with a straight face saying that those acts wouldn't qualify to get them on the list. And that may be legalistic, but it's worth mentioning.
While we have Robert Baer with us, I just want to switch back to ask you about this, Robert Baer. I understand on the public record is partly that you had had field assignments working for the CIA in operations in countries ranging from India, Lebanon, Tajikistan, Morocco, Iraqi Kurdistan. I wonder, given your experience and knowledge of the Middle East and in the 1990s specifically, what was your understanding of the relationship between the MEK and Saddam Hussein at that time in Iraq?
Oh, it was close. I mean, when I was in Iraq in the mid-90s, the Iranians were sending in agents to kill the MEK, and they were doing it out of the north in Kurdistan. It was a simmering war. It was close to a hot war.
This is the Iran-Iraq war in which Saddam Hussein...
Even until the mid-90s, the Iranians were still fighting inside Iraq against the MEK. They would stop at nothing to assassinate their leaders. The Iranians are either paranoid, completely paranoid, or they take the MEK as a serious threat. I won't comment either way, But, you know, I'd like to add at this point, if this administration in its favor, and we should be fair about this, is under enormous pressure to hit Iran, bomb it. And in you know, pursuing very strict sanctions and delisting the MEK, there's probably some residual hope that they can stave off an Israeli attack on Iran. So you have to be fair about this. And I don't know that it's going to work. And I don't even know that Netanyahu is serious about bombing Iran. But the White House has to consider it. And I think the White House, as I do, think the last thing we need is a third war in the Middle East against Iran in the middle of all this chaos. I mean, you think it's bad with this film and all the violence, an attack on Iran would just stir it up like you wouldn't believe.
How do some of the people that you may have spoken with in the Middle East, Robert Baer, and I understand you speak Arabic and a number of other languages that are common in the region. How, in general, what's some of the range of views in the Middle East about the MEK itself or organizations like it?
You know, the Arabs don't really much think about the MEK. They don't much think about Iran. They don't particularly like Iran because it's a culture that believes it's more advanced than the Arabs. Well, the Iranians, in a sense, believe they're more advanced than we are. They're an older civilization, and on and on. So there's no real consideration of Ahmadinejad. But on a national security level, Iran and the Gulf countries are terrified of our reconciling with Iran in some grand bargain that would include, you know, giving up their nuclear weapons, because the fact is the Iranians, this is what the Arabs tell me, that they're in the business of oil, so they can produce up to 9 million barrels. So if you add that, let's say, you know, it's a fantastic amount, but 6 million barrels from Iraq a day, that's 15 million barrels. And all of a sudden, the Iranians are dwarfing the Arabs. And this is their major fear, is that Iran will be resurgent somehow out of all this, and that the Americans will make a bargain. So, you know, in this MEK thing, we're sending a signal to the Arabs, in a sense, the Arab leadership, that we are not about to reconcile with Iran. And at that time, I could just speculate that's part of the decision.
And finally, just Robert Baer, I wonder what your thoughts are about when an organization like the MEK, the terrorist MEK, until yesterday, apparently, if they're officially delisted yesterday, is removed from the Foreign Terrorist Organization watch list of the U.S. State Department. What kind of new freedoms does that give them to operate in the world, to do the kinds of things they've been accused of, attempted assassinations, if not having committed assassinations? What kind of new freedoms would that give a group like that?
Well, if I were the MEK, I'd immediately hit the American electorate. They need us to get back to Iran, and I would be all over the United States openly soliciting money, soliciting support, you know, pushing this idea that the mullahs are irredeemable, and if they were only supported, they would be able to go in and run Iran to our liking, you know, mutual benefit, on and on and on. The same thing all exiles do. They need somebody else to ride back into their home country, and that's what they want to do with us. So I expect you'll see them all over the United States, and you'll see this propaganda machine unleashed on us, and the only question is, you know, how effective it will be.
And Jeremiah Gulka, in our last few minutes here, you've written as recently as July in the American Prospect about the Mujahideen-e-Khalq and trying to steer its supporters in the United States toward war, showing, as you say, the enemy of our enemy is not our friend. What do you think is the most interesting background about the MEK to bring to American awareness at this time?
That they're a cult group that is a fringe group that is pretending to be a democratic, widely supported group in Iran, and that's just flagrantly false. These are not our friends. There are some people who hate Iran and the Iranian government. There are some people who would, in politics, who would find either the prospect of war, the threat of war, or the actual starting of a war to be politically useful. And it, you know, the contracts that flow from it might be politically useful, and there are people who would want the contracts themselves.
So is the MEK...
Not, I would say this is not the group for anybody to be listening to. And I worry that the people who actually have an interest in either, in having a war, a near war, or a threat of war, are going to use the MEK like they used Ahmed Shalabi before to help, loosen our way towards war in Iraq.
Let me cut in here. Jeremiah is 100% right. You can take that to the bank.
And so the MEK, it sounds like, Jeremiah Gulka, you would not characterize as some kind of new democratic movement for democracy within Iran that has popular support among the Iranian people against its
Absolutely
current government.
Not. Absolutely not. They've been claiming that they are since they left Iran in 1981. They've had a propaganda machine that has been pretty effective, that's become extremely effective, and it's a fraud. And people need to realize that. As Robert said, it's that they will be able to unleash their propaganda machine now because by virtue of getting off of the list, it will no longer be illegal for them to raise money. And once they do that, they'll be free to go about their business. There'll be probably more former politicians who will feel perfectly comfortable taking money from them, and even more than the ones who already did. It's worrisome.
Well, Jeremiah Gulka and Robert Baer, thank you both very much for joining us today on Sounds of Dissent.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Jeremiah Gulka, who interviewed many former MEK members in Iraq, he worked for the RAND Corporation from 2007 to 2010, researched and wrote about the Mujahideen-e-Khalq for RAND's client, the Detainee Operations Command, which was a task force on Iraq founded after the Abu Ghraib scandal. He also worked in the Bush administration's Justice Department. Our other guest, Robert Baer, worked for the CIA as a case officer, primarily assigned to the Middle East. He is currently Time Magazine's Time.com intelligence columnist, and he's written several books, including most recently The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story with his wife, Dana Baer. You can also find his book, The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm John Grebe.